Toto. I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome back to Dragonreel, the fantasy film podcast. I'm Chris, your host, and I don't care what kind of a dream you had, I still have a warrant to kill your dog. And in chair number two, there's no use denying he is a dandelion. It's Pete.
Why, thank you, and put him off. That's all.
Rounding out our panel tonight, in chair number three, is she a good witch or a bad witch? Either way, it's Sharon.
I'm a good witch, and I'm an honest witch. Not like that Glenda. Who's such a liar.
Okay, she is okay, kind of full of it.
We will get to that.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, I'll hold on to you. So I have anger over this, okay?
No, I know. If you haven't figured it out right now, this is episode 16, and we are going to talk about the classic from 1939, The Wizard of Oz.
Amazing. Now,
there is so much Hollywood mystique and mythology based around this movie, and I asked a question on Reddit and got a few answers about, if you're under 20, did you grow up watching this movie? And, a few people did reply that they did. I mean, it wasn't one of the top questions, but I got enough replies.
So they said they did.
That they did. It's still around. It's still 20. Part of people's childhood.
Okay. Right. I know it was mine, but I'm way over 20.
Right, right.
Well, plus we had a lot of times where it was rebroadcast on either basic cable or the networks.
Right.
Oh. So
I think I used to watch it on ABC, and it was on, on Sunday night, and that was the family time for movies. And
I want to see it was one of the Thanksgiving rotations on WPIX out of New York.
Wow.
So I was looking at the trivia about that, and maybe it was on the Wikipedia page, but it went through different networks over the course of our childhood and lifetime. Depending on which network it had. Or which network had it, that changed which time of the year they played it.
Oh.
So one of them played it at Christmas, one of them played it at Easter, and I think one of them made it the Thanksgiving movie.
Wow, so there you go.
Huh.
How about
that? That's fascinating.
That is kind of cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so much involved in this movie that we all, have grown up knowing or finding out about or thinking was really cool. One of the first things I thought was funny about this movie was when I realized that there were jokes in this movie, like when I was about 10 or so, and this line right here came up. I'm going to play it for you.
I want to see you and your wife right away about Dorothy.
Dorothy? Well, what has Dorothy done?
What's she done? I'm all but lame from the bite on my leg.
You mean she bit you?
No, her dog.
Oh, she bit her dog, eh?
But
no! And then she goes, no! With this disgusted sound in her voice.
That's one of those lines that I love because of the wordplay as much as if you've ever seen Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. There's a scene where they're talking about death, and Rosencrantz says, well, maybe death is a boat. And Guildenstern says, no, death is not a boat. Death is the ultimate negative.
Right. Death is not being.
It's not being. You can't not be on a boat. And Rosencrantz says, I've often not been on boats. And Guildenstern says, no, what you've been is not on boats. So there you go. And it's such a great interplay. I love those
things. Yes, one of my favorite parts of that movie, actually.
I love her voice. Doesn't she have the perfect witch voice?
Yeah, apparently she was a fan of the book as well, and when she found out she was going to be in it, she was really psyched. And when she found out she was going to be the witch, she was like, oh, I guess I could do that.
Poor Margaret.
Well, wow. I mean, she's just perfect.
I mean, it's a legendary performance. Margaret Hamilton.
Yeah.
As Miss Gulch and the Wicked Witch of the West, she played another part in the movie. Do you know what it is? She's not credited.
She's not credited for it?
Right.
No.
Yeah, I don't
know. The Wicked Witch of the East.
Oh, really?
What, her feet?
Those are
her
legs?
No. When she is flying, when the Wicked Witch of the East is flying past Dorothy's window.
Oh, right.
That's her as well. But that can't be the Wicked Witch of the West. That has to be the one of the East, because then she dropped the house on her.
Right, because that's the one that dies, and then her tootsie's
but
called
she's
right
nowhere,
up.
Nowhere
all the way up.
Yeah, nowhere in any of this is she credited as playing the Wicked Witch of the East.
Did they do different makeup, are you sure?
It's the same makeup. It's the same character, but...
Oh, okay.
It's when she's riding the bike in the tornado and then transforms into a witch and...
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
When Dorothy looks out her window.
Yes.
When she's... Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah. I mean, I remember that from when I was sighted. Do you guys know that I think the part of Dorothy was originally supposed to be Shirley Temple?
Not surprising. Shirley Temple probably would have been closer to the right age.
True.
Yeah.
They had to torture Judy Garland for this part.
Well, I heard they starved Judy Garland because they said
they starved her. The MGM
corseted her too, as I remember.
Yeah, MGM gave her a really painful corset to flatten her chest. And I mean, Judy Garland suffered so much for this movie and for other things she was doing at MGM.
Oh my gosh!
You if you heard it all today, you would be like, how could this possibly be happening?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was, I mean, this isn't an excuse, but it was a different time. So,
yeah.
They, you know, they worked, you know, children actors. And didn't you say that the woman that played the Wicked Witch also got, like, second and third degree burns because of one of the pyrotechnic scenes?
Yeah, there's that scene.
I think her cape lights on fire when she appears in that.
It's when she disappears, and there's like a 10-foot column of fire that pops up out of the floor where she disappears.
Right.
They did that take twice, and on the first one,
she lit up like a Christmas tree.
The floor opened too soon, and you can actually see it in the film. And in the second take, she got second and third degree burns from that fire effect, and they ended up not even using that take.
Wow.
The second take. They ended up using the first take.
Holy
well,
yes.
Think about it. It was 39?
Yeah.
Or 29?
1939.
Yeah.
Yeah, and probably all the animals that were in there too were that wasn't any computerized
no.
stuff. That was all.
No, they were eaten by catering.
Oh. You know, Toto really, you know, did the stuff that Toto did. I'm sure the horse
Toto.
Is in there. Stop it.
So Victor Fleming has directing credit on this, but I actually went through 5 directors.
Oh my God!
5 directors.
Usually,
5 directors.
When that happens, the thing is a horrible bomb.
Yeah, one of the directors wanted to give Judy Garland a blonde wig, and the whole aesthetic of it was different. And when Victor Fleming came in, he said, "No, we're going to change this and this and this around." But the first director was not really. I think it would have been a disaster.
Why would
if he had stayed at the
have
helm?
Done that? I mean, I know that the ruby slippers. I know that was something that they did for the movie. But in the mm-hmm. book, it was silver. But the silver wouldn't have looked as you know, deep and
right. The whole thing was like this new Technicolor technology, and it made these vibrant colors. And so they went, why don't we, you know, make the shoes a vibrant color so that it uses this technology?
Now you've read quite a bit on the trivia of this. Did they not hypersaturate that film to make it look even? More so, I guess, is the word I'm looking for.
That's not specifically called out, but yeah, I mean, the colors in this are really
right, because
vibrant.
They really saturated that film.
Didn't you say there was some kind of, they used browns in the beginning part when she's on the farm? And there was some kind of special technique when she goes to the, you know, when she lands?
I thought my memory was faulty, because I grew up thinking that the Kansas scenes were in black and white. They're not really in black and white. As of the DVD release that we have, they're in sepia tone.
Well, what is sepia tone?
Well, that's the browns that's used in much older films. So it was used
specifically.
That's funny, because I could
have sworn that was pronounced sepia, which is exactly what
incorrect.
The Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines it as being pronounced as.
It's wrong. I'm sorry.
Oh, boy.
Really? You can take that up with Merriam-Webster, then.
I think if you look that up, it's actually Merriam-Webster.
Okay, you say potato, I say potato.
Well, it may be Merriam-Webster, but it certainly is sepia.
Okay. When I watched it again, I thought my memory was faulty because I remembered it being in black and white. But apparently, the TV releases throughout the 70s and 80s, when it was shown on TV, that was in black and white.
Well, there you go.
Oh.
So they changed that out.
Neat.
I don't know why.
Fascinating.
But the effect that they get when she opens the door and you see the color through the doorway,
mm-hmm.
and then she steps through wearing the blue dress, but you had just seen her run up to the door and open it wearing, you know, in sepia tone.
Well, what color was the dress?
They actually had a body double in... like brown clothes and browned out skin and the whole set inside the house was done up in that, or on that wall rather.
Neat.
That facade. Yeah. So and then when Judy Garland actually walks through, that's a different person from who opened that door.
That is some great practical effects in this movie.
Yes. And this movie is a watershed event in special effects.
The scenes, though, were just matte paintings, right? Like when they were looking at the Emerald City, wasn't
yes.
it just a painting? And so
I'm not sure how they did the one that sparkles, but everything, you know, in every scene, you can really kind of, in this day and age, when we're used to, you know, the most dazzling Hollywood magic, you can
like
really
the Star
tell
Wars
that,
movies, yeah.
yeah, you can really tell that some of the things are, that this whole thing is done on a soundstage.
Well, do you think it holds up? I mean, I think it does. I mean,
I think
as long
it holds up, in spite
something.
Of the fact that you can tell that they're walking up to a painting at the back of the stage.
Yeah, they're yeah. walking up to a background, but that's
yes.
still, I mean, I don't think that detracts from it at all, because the whole point is that it's a fantastical place.
Yeah, I concur.
And that in the end, it turns out that it's something that she dreamt of, supposedly. So
we could debate that for a very long time, because...
Oh, I'm not debating,
yeah.
because that's book versus movie, you know.
Right.
Because in the book,
right.
obviously, she didn't dream about it, but in the movie, she
right.
did. Because they didn't know
yeah.
if they were going to ever make a sequel.
Yeah, and you
know,
were
so.
There, and you were there, and you were
right.
there. I always wanted to say, but you weren't there.
Yeah, so it's like when Frodo wakes up in Rivendell.
Yeah, I'm glad that Judy Garland was in the movie, because I just adore her voice, and when I was little, I wanted to be Dorothy in the Wizard of Oz play so bad.
Yeah.
Oh my. Yeah. I'm showing how old I am, but I had a record of this, and I would just.
Was it a 45?
I don't want to admit to that. And I'm not going to. I'm sticking to my story. I'm not going to admit to it. I think I have the whole record memorized. And I started singing We're Off to See the Wizard, and I started singing the Scarecrow song when we were watching it. And Chris, he didn't even mind it. And I was waiting for him to say, how do you know all the words to this? But he didn't ask me that, so that was kind of
I know how you know all the words to this.
You're a total fangirl when it comes to Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, I really am.
I think one of the reasons they also went with Judy Garland was just because she had the pipes over Shirley Temple.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she's got that really wonderful, wonderful voice.
Oh, oh my goodness, yes. I think it would have been a different movie with Shirley Temple. I think it would have, I mean, she would have been cute, of course. I mean, Shirley Temple, you know. Was
adorable, baby, adorable.
Adorable. I mean, like,
adorable.
Sweet as a little muffin that you could just eat up, but, I mean, I think there would have been a tap dance number in it if Shirley.
Well, yeah, probably.
You know, I
so
think
there were other musical numbers that were cut from this. One of them is still around.
Don't say a tap dance number.
I don't know about a tap dance number, but one of them is still around and gets, you know, put on all of the, you know, the more recent releases of the soundtrack for this, the Jitterbug. Right. I remember hearing about that in the 90s, and then, you know, the next time, I think it was the 75th anniversary that it was released.
Oh, really?
The Jitterbug was on that one, yeah.
When did they do the Jitterbug? Do you know?
When?
Yeah, when in the movie do they do the Jitterbug?
I actually do know, because of also you know, doing a reading on this. So there's this line, when the witch is sending the monkeys after them, right? So what she says is, I'm sending, here, I'll play it.
Your army to the haunted forest and bring me that girl and her dog. Do what you like with the others, but I want her alive and unharmed. They'll give you no trouble, I promise you that.
That's like a kind of a continuity error in the movie.
Oh,
because
totally.
We don't see little insects. Never.
We never hear anything about a little insect.
No, I don't
even
remember
because they cut that dance number out.
Oh,
so it
well,
was
there,
a
yeah.
dance number. So they were
yeah.
getting bit by insects?
I don't remember. I mean, I don't know exactly the context, but it was a song called The Jitterbug. We have it on a disc somewhere. I can play it for you. Yeah, but that's where that number went.
Huh. I wonder, do you know, since you've done all the trivia research, is there a director's cut that includes all the cutscenes?
No, the scene was not finished. But
oh, okay, gotcha.
There are scenes that one of the people on the set, it might have been the director, was making some home video.
Okay.
Of the dress rehearsals and the, you know, the preparation for actual filming. So there are some scenes that are not, you know, Hollywood produced. They're like handheld camera produced.
Right.
But they're out there.
Okay.
And I think that is, I think one of them has Judy Garland in a blonde wig.
Cool.
Oh.
Okay.
Probably a difficult thing to find. I have not seen it myself.
Gotcha. All of this was lovely, but what about the movie?
Yeah, so there's a whole movie about this.
Munchkin Land. So the film was done with little people, right?
Yes.
And some of them were kids, though.
But everything that happened in Oz reflected something that happened before she went to Oz. You know, like when the farmhands are talking, Ray Bolger's character says something about, haven't you got any brains?
Right.
And the one that Bert Lahr's character, character, he runs in and saves Dorothy from the pigs.
Wait, which one was that?
Bert Lahr.
The one who plays the lion shows courage. Shows courage in rescuing Dorothy from the pigs. And the one who plays the Tin Man says, they're going to erect a statue of me in this town. And he puts his hand up like he's like, exactly like the Tin Man is stuck in that position.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So now, what made you think of that when I mentioned them getting to Oz and talking about Munchkin?
Because we're talking about going to Oz, and I want to just mention that you know, that it all reflects everybody she's met right before, or she's talked to right before she goes to Oz.
The guy that was the fake guy in the caravan.
The fake fortune.
Oh, yeah, this guy right here. I got this great clip.
Please, Professor, why can't we go with you and see all the crown heads of Europe?
Do you know any? Oh, you mean the thing. Yes.
Not really.
Oh, my God, he's fantastic.
I love this actor. He's just so brilliant in this movie, and he plays like a billion characters.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
He does.
He also plays the doorman,
plays
doesn't he?
The gatekeeper, yeah.
He's almost everyone that they talk to in Oz.
Good Lord.
Yeah, he's got a great voice. I bet that guy was a comedian, because he is just...
Well, his comedic timing... What was his name?
Frank Morgan.
Thank you. He's got amazing chops, you know? I mean, was he like a vaudevillian or something?
From the age he was in 1939, I would say he probably had to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant in this. Just perfect in everything he's doing.
It was cast really well.
Yes.
I believe. I mean, that's just my little opinion. And as a kindergarten teacher, I think this movie is still appropriate for kids. But can I just say, when I was little, the witch scared the crap out of me.
Sure.
Like when Dorothy is in that room with the hourglass, and then the witch's face replaces Aunt May's, I was scared.
Aunt May.
Aunt May is Spider-Man.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
But you know why? Because I just saw Captain America, and Spider-Man was talking to Aunt May. I think that's why I just did that.
True.
So I'm Auntie M. Yeah. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Yeah, I did my homework for this movie. I think I just sublimed myself.
Oh, my.
So the witch really scared me when I was little. There weren't many parts that I was scared, but when the witch's face goes into the crystal ball, I was really, really frightened. And I can say as an adult, because can we talk about Glenda now?
Do you want to talk to
Glenda? I want to talk about Glenda, because... Okay, she's supposed to be a good witch, right? And what I really noticed this time when I watched it was I watched it very carefully, because it's always been suspicious to me, like, why didn't Glenda help her? And when Dorothy lands and they're talking and she's asking her if she's a good witch or a bad witch and all that stuff, and then Dorothy says, you know, I want to go home. And she says, well, the only person that can help you is the great and powerful Wizard of Oz.
That's a lie.
Right, because later on, Glenda shows up, and Glenda says that you've had the power to go home all along. And Dorothy does ask, well, you know, why didn't you tell me? And she says, because you wouldn't have believed me.
Yeah, and I was like, well, you could try me.
You could have said something. But I guess then the whole story wouldn't have happened.
Right.
She wouldn't have had to go down the yellow brick road. She wouldn't have met.
She's like a really controlling dungeon master.
You mean Glenda?
Glenda, yeah. It's Glinda, not Glenda.
Glinda. Glinda, sorry.
Glinda, the Good Witch of the North. How come we never meet the Good Witch of the South is what I want to know.
In the book, Glinda is the Witch of the South.
So who's the Witch of the North?
I don't think she gets named.
How that is?
So the first thing that she needs to know about Dorothy, she can't tell. So here's what bugs me, right? Okay, she comes in and says this.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch? Who, me? I'm not a witch at all. I'm Dorothy Gale from Kansas.
And then 2 minutes later, she asks the same question again.
Because the Munchkins want to know.
Right, the Munchkins want to know.
What do you mean?
And if I was Dorothy, I would say, what the f*** did I just say?
Oh, my God, Chris. I don't think she asked
her
again.
Were you not paying attention? Did I stutter?
And
we're both
then,
speaking English here, right?
And then it gets even worse. It gets even worse. I got more for this. Later on, Dorothy says, well, witches are ugly. And Glinda says, ah, ha, 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 only bad witches are ugly. So is she saying that Dorothy might be considered ugly?
Well, because she's plain and brown hair.
Right. If only bad witches are ugly, why does she have to ask?
Wait a minute. I don't.
Never thought of that one, did you?
No, because Dorothy specifically says she's not a witch, but she dropped the house on her, which is magic. So that's
you're not following me here.
No. It's the fact. The fact is that you both are making good points. One is the fact that Chris says that Glinda is implying that Dorothy is a bad witch because she's not pretty. Bring up the fact that Glinda is also a horrible liar because she says to Dorothy at the beginning, the only person who can get you home is the Wizard of Oz, and then she changes her story at the end of the movie.
Right.
Yes.
So Glinda not only called Dorothy ugly, she also lied to her and sent her on a bullshit quest. Do you know why?
You're right. She's a totally controlling dungeon master.
She is.
To get the wizard out of Oz.
To expose the wizard and to kill the wizard.
Yeah, to kill the Wicked Witch.
Right. Glinda is using Dorothy as a proxy in her war against the other magic users of the kingdom.
Oh, my God. Chris,
wow.
This is not
and she inadvertently had already taken out one of the contenders.
Exactly.
There you go.
This is deeper than you ever suspected.
Dorothy Gale, assassin for the witches.
Exactly.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. Well, she does
I need to have a second. Just my mind is blown.
You guys. But, You explained to me, Chris, that Glinda puts the ruby slippers on Dorothy's feet.
Yes.
And that's why the bad witch can't take them off of her.
Well, that's what she says, but then she kisses her on the forehead. And in the book, that kiss happens. That kiss is what protects Dorothy and Oz.
So it doesn't explain...
Oh, it's not the ruby slippers.
No, it's not the ruby. It's not even the silver slippers in the book. It's the kiss of the good witch.
Yeah.
So the bad witch can't harm her directly.
Oh.
Indirectly,
well, there you go then.
And she can do things like the poppy field,
right.
Or send bugs to Hector them, or send flying
or
monkeys.
Or flying monkeys, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Now another interesting thing is Chris asked me this. He said, "So the Wicked Witch tells Dorothy when this sand timer runs out, you know, you're going to be dead. But how is she going to be dead? Because I said to Chris, I think she's just going to stop breathing, but I don't know how I ever knew that. Like, as a child, I just thought, because the witch said so.
She said, when the sand runs out, you're going to die, but she never said, of what?
Right.
Or how, yeah.
Right.
But I always thought she was going to stop breathing, and I don't know why I thought that.
Right. You're jumping ahead, though. Can we come back to that?
Certainly.
I mean, we were talking about Munchkinland, and I still have more things to say about Munchkinland.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, please, let us know what you have to say about Munchkinland.
In particular, this part.
The ruby slippers. What have you done with them? Give them back to me or I'll... It's too late. There they are, and there they'll stay.
Why?
Any boo-boo. Uh-huh.
So Glinda gets somebody to kill a monster and loot the corpse. Why does Glinda have a claim? So these ruby slippers belonged to the Wicked Witch of the East.
So first edition D&D. Go ahead.
By any legal interpretation, they should go to the next of kin.
Chris, whose side are you on in this show?
I'm not on anybody's side. I just don't see what claim...
No, but that doesn't count, Chris, because she could have died in a state. So if she didn't have a living will, that wouldn't necessarily go immediately to the next of kin.
Oh, okay. So was she only holding the slippers in trust?
Well, we don't know what which law says. Which law?
We don't know. We also don't know what the actuaries of Oz have to say about
these
situations.
If you kill the witch, you get their stuff. I mean... That could be the
right.
case.
Right, so that is like the template on which D&D is founded.
That's right.
Kinda, yeah.
If you kill somebody, you get their stuff.
Like I said, first edition D&D.
Absolutely.
So that's why Dorothy gets the slippers.
Right. I just, you know, while I'm watching it this time, I'm like, why exactly is she entitled to those? So there's no real reason.
Well, but if you think about it, Oz is essentially a sort of somewhat feudal land, and during the times of feudal law, you know, if I conquered a baron's castle and took his stuff, I'm not going to give it to the baron's son.
Right.
I'm going to hold on to that. I had the might to take the baron's castle.
So I think that part of why she was entitled to them was that she had to suffer through this 15 minutes of Munchkinland.
Saying thank you?
I got really annoyed with how long the Munchkinland scene was going on.
Oh, stop!
Because you hate little people. That's fine. You can just come out and say it.
No, it's just because this was...
I disagree.
I don't know. This is... It's
no,
so
no,
innate
no,
that
not.
These people are...
No, it's not.
Okay,
it's
okay. Let's try thinking about somebody who has to live with this for all of eternity.
What I love is the fact that...
You would kill those people
okay.
so fast.
It's cute. It's cute. Stop it.
It is cute, but my favorite part of it is the fact that they actually had to bring in a coroner to officially declare
oh, yes.
the Wicked Witch he's dead.
Yes.
He says all the E words, like legally
yes.
and morally and physically. Yeah. She's dead.
Yes.
She's totally dead.
She's most yeah. definitely dead.
Yeah.
And so they can do Ding Dong, the Witch is dead.
Yes.
Ding dong,
another musical number. There's like three musical numbers in Munchkinland.
Ding dong.
How freaking
annoying
is that?
Like it's a bad thing.
Wake up, head. Rub your eyes. Get out of bed. I can sing the whole song. You guys can keep talking, but yes, I'm just kidding.
I know you could sing the whole song.
I was.
Oh, don't worry, because we all know that's a horse of a different color.
Oh, Way. A horse of a different color.
Uh huh. Okay. You know I'm sitting here with my finger on the mute button.
I am rated fire at will.
I think the reason that I love this musical is because I love that the quest, the path, is the yellow brick road. Because it's like so, you know, like when you do a fantasy book, it's never been so obvious as follow the yellow brick road.
Right.
You know, I just think that's like amazing. To me. I don't know if you guys get what I'm saying, but...
I would like to point out, though, that the Yellow Brick Road forks and twists and goes all kinds of places.
It sure does.
I actually have yeah. that in my notes. Why didn't she tell her about the crossroads?
Exactly. But everybody whom she meets at the different crossroads seems to know where to go.
So that's another weird thing that I mentioned while we were watching it.
Yeah.
When she approached the place where the scarecrow was, I said, now watch this, Sharon. She doesn't know which way to go. And then the scarecrow obviously didn't know which way to go either because he hasn't got a brain. At the end of the musical number, they walk off with absolute confidence down one of the roads. How did they know which one to go down?
Because we all know that the scarecrow actually does have brain. He just doesn't
yeah.
have a degree.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he proves it the whole time. I mean, there's many different circumstances in the movie where he shows.
Yeah, I think we counted, was it three or four, where he uses intelligence to solve a problem that they
right.
couldn't get past.
But that
yes.
was the whole point. That's what you're. That's why the wizard never did give nothing
yeah,
to the ten.
The wizard didn't have to do anything.
And here I have a sample of the music that you can hear when you first approach the scarecrow.
The lunatic is on ah! the grass.
Okay.
Always a classic.
I love doing Dark Side of the Moon to Wizard of Oz. It's fantastic. Oh my God, that's wonderful.
So that's another bit of pop culture trivia, is that around about the time people started getting home video, people who also smoked a lot of weed figured out that certain things if you play Dark Side of the Moon as soon as you start Wizard of Oz, certain things line up, and that's one of the things.
As soon as it turns color.
And I hear different things for it every time.
Well, the reason why I'm saying this is because they actually played that at the Citadel in North Baltimore when I first moved to Maryland.
Yeah.
They had it up there, and they had a flywheel on the projector so that they could slow down certain sequences so it would stay in perfect alignment with the movie.
Nice.
But it starts with the color.
Okay, because the Wikipedia page says you start when that some people say you start with the color. It says some people say you start when you first see the lion in the MGM logo.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And well, some people say when you hear the lion roar the second time, you start the...
Well, like
stuff.
You said, the when they played it at the Citadel, that's where...
So
it
was
kind of a goofy thing anyway.
Yes.
I love the... you could go that way, or you could go that way, and some mm-hmm. people go both ways, and...
I'm sure they do. Me, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if that was a reference to something else. I have no idea, but I just...
I'm not sure that L. Frank Baum was that progressive.
Okay.
Well, it wasn't his line anyway.
Yeah. I like the scarecrow, but I really like the Tin Man. I guess I just like the emotion part of the... I think there's something for everybody
in
this movie. You know,
so
whether you're young or old or any age.
Again, I'm going back to jokes that I didn't get when I was a kid, but when I got a little older and remembered the movie, things like this stuck out as really clever.
How can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
I don't know.
I don't
Some
know.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking, don't they?
Yes, too true.
I guess you're right.
That's exactly right.
And many of them are in politics.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think that's where everybody's mind goes when that line comes up.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So you got the tinsmith. I'm sorry, you got to the tin man. Mm-hmm. What did you? You said you liked him better? Why is that?
I like him the best. Well, I guess because I'm just a gooey, emotional person, so I'm soft and mushy. Unlike the tin man, that's hard and hollow, but...
it seemed to me that he had a much longer musical number. Oh, there was your tap number right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he does.
Yeah,
and
he has a tap.
Toot, toot. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and the whole tin sound.
I think the fact that he toots is the whole reason why he's your
friend. You got to like a man who toots.
No, it's just that he's so gentle and he's so sweet and he's like, don't make me cry, I'll rust. And
but then there's that. Forgot to give me a heart.
Oh, beautiful voice.
No heart? No heart.
No heart.
All heart.
Yep, it's all hollow. It sounds like he's a person who was manufactured completely from tin and that he didn't exist before.
Right, that he's kind of Pinocchio.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, in the books, big difference there.
Yeah.
What is he in the books?
In the books, he was a person who was his name was Nick Chopper.
Yeah, he was a woodcutter.
He was a woodcutter, and the Wicked Witch put a spell on him to curse his axe. And he accidentally would chop off a limb, and he went to a tinsmith and got the limb replaced. And then he chopped off his other leg, and then he would get that replaced.
Wow.
And there was like
something
about...
Well, I can
see
why they replaced that, because that's really freaking dark.
Yeah.
it's
darker in the books. It's worse than that. It's because he was in love with a Munchkin girl.
Oh.
And the Munchkin girl's... either father or fiance or boy, I don't know, something, got the witch to put this curse on him.
Jeez.
And he lost limb after limb, and then his head, and then finally his chest.
Wow, Munchkins, the Ewoks of the...
So, and then, you know, finally every last piece of him was replaced with tin.
Oh, wow.
It gets really, really dark that in a later book, somebody else loses body parts and gets his body parts put on them.
Oh, that's the Patchwork Man, isn't it?
I'm not sure I haven't gotten to that part. I'm like getting this from Wikipedia because I haven't gotten to that book yet. But the worst part
is
like the Munchkin girl marries that guy that's made of his body parts.
Oh my goodness!
Oh, eek! Oh. Eek! Eek!
Yeah.
Oh my God, eek!
Can I just say, like, yeah, this really takes after the Grimm fairy tales, and
I
think we have to remember that. Fairy tales for kids nowadays, nowadays is much different from years ago because...
Thank you, Mr. Pearl.
Well, I'm just saying that children's stories used to be very, very dark. Like, Disney has really fairy tales for kids, like Mermaid. She died.
It wasn't just Disney. It was actually a 19th century Frenchman named Charles Perrault.
Tell us about that, Pete, because I'm not sure who
He's the guy who introduced the concept of the happy ending.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
did he work in a massage parlor?
He rewrote a bunch of the fairy tales so that they would have happy endings.
Ah, okay, what a jerk.
I know. Mm. What a knob.
The Tin Woodman
yes.
has this really, really dark story in the movie.
No.
Or in the book. None of that darkness is touched on in the movie.
Ooh. Well, I don't think it needs it.
No, of course not.
It doesn't... The movie's long enough without that, and that would be... I mean, that could be its own story. Really, and I think it's really about more Dorothy and her journey, and then she meets these friends, and she loves them, and she goes through she goes, of course, to the Emerald City. She has her happy times and her sad times, and where she almost dies, and it's got all the very wonderful classic elements of a fabulous story, and
it's an epic quest.
Good triumphs over evil.
I guess that's ultimately the moral, but other than that, she doesn't really learn anything in this entire trip.
I think she does.
Like, I think she does too.
What she learns is she wished to go someplace else. She didn't want to be in Kansas, and she's like someplace where there isn't any trouble. Do you suppose there is such a place, Toto? And then she sings Somewhere Over the Rainbow, but she realizes, and this is very meaningful to me. She realizes in her journey. That home is the best place to be. She realized, like, when the one guy says, you know, your aunt is your Aunt Em is like clutching her heart and she's missing you, and she tries to get back to her, but then there's the tornado, and yeah. she can't. She hits her head. Whether it's a dream or whether it's reality, she loves her, and she knows her aunt and her uncle, you know, I'm sorry, love her very much, and she just wants to get home to them.
Unfortunately, she fell in with the wrong person, and then this happened.
Let's go inside here. We'll just come along. I'll show you. That's right here.
In a modern setting, that would be the last anyone saw Dorothy alive.
Oh, my God. Chris, sort of saying in modern terms when she went.
Yes. You don't. She's running away from home. She's got no one to protect her. She lets somebody, you know, she tells somebody that she's all alone and vulnerable.
Excuse me.
And then
she's
follows
got somebody
him
to protect
inside.
Her. She's got a little yappy dog, which, as we all know,
right.
is the ultimate defect.
Yeah, as we all know. Well, when Chris was reading the books, he tells me about, you know, that it was a different time because Dorothy meets a hobo in one of the books and says, yeah, you're my best friend. Come along with me. And what do we tell children nowadays? We
Stranger
tell them,
danger.
Yeah, don't talk to strangers. If you don't know them, run away.
Yeah, it's the second book. It's The Road to Oz.
Because crazy people in the old days used to be locked up and put away far from the rest of us.
Yeah. Well, it's just like that Santa Claus movie that we did. Remember how the kids are talking to Mr. Claus?
Claus?
Claus? Outside the house.
Manfred's
and then the mother says, yeah, come on in. We'll give you some soup. You know, so, I mean, life was different. I mean, people knew their neighbors in 39. And, I
Are
mean,
you, saying you don't know your neighbors?
Pretty much. I mean, we'll shovel their sidewalk, but, I don't think a lot of people do. I mean, maybe it's different in other states, but in Maryland, we don't. I mean,
It's not that different in many other places. Honestly, I don't think we have that. But then again, you don't necessarily have a neighbor for as long as you used to in the past. Also, that used
that's
to be
true.
A lifetime commitment, and now
yeah.
it can be
yeah.
over in years.
But Oz.
But Oz. I think that Oz is a time and people, strangers talk to each other, and it's a different land, and there's magical creatures. But she still wants
right.
to go home.
Right.
Speaking of those magical creatures, I think we've moved on our way up to the lion.
Yeah. So Sharon pointed out to me something this time that I never really noticed before.
Was it the bird silhouette in the background that looks like a dangling munchkin?
No, but that's also mentioned on Wikipedia. I did see it this time, and I never seen it before.
Well, what did I say? Because I'm dying to know what smart thing I said.
You pointed out how sort of like naturally and organically the other two went into their musical numbers, and then this happened.
Oh, it's so awkward.
I've got to tell you how I feel.
Well, come on.
And then he goes
awkward.
Into this.
Awkward!
Get out of it already!
It's so forced.
It's like, well, come on.
Why do you have to be so
mean? Shut him up. Shut him up.
The director says, you know, you got to think right here.
So I really like the way that Bert Lahr kind of plays this sort of – it seems to borrow heavily from the Three Stooges. Wow, wise guy.
And he reminded me more of a Costello in some things with the when he's running away rather than the
yeah.
kind of thing. You know, still, I think Bert Lahr did a bang-up job as the Cowardly Lion. And a very large contrast between the farmhands that he plays and the lion
yes.
itself, which is wonderful.
So there's this point where Glinda the Bad Dungeon Master makes all of her people fail their saving throw and then has to go in and save them.
She doesn't make all the people, only the biological ones.
Right, only the organics, yes.
Right, because the non-biologics we know are immune to sleep spells.
Right, but they both dumped strength.
What's that?
They both dumped strength, so they can't carry the lion and Dorothy out.
True.
So then the dungeon
master...
Well,
to be fair, a lion's like 300 pounds.
Yeah.
So it would be really hard to carry him out anyway.
Yeah, so then she has to go in and say, oh, no, you guys made your saves this time, because I'm... because,
Yes, it is! Maybe that'll help!
The first thing that I said was, oh, it's snowing. No, it isn't. You're right, the forest is on fire.
Oh my
God. I'm curing narcolepsy with hypothermia.
Did you say they used to bad thing for that snow? What was the chemical?
It was asbestos. That I know.
Yes.
Asbestos. Oh, my
yes,
God.
Yes, it was flaked asbestos. And that's not the only movie they did that in, either.
That's
yeah.
That's
so I felt like sticking in the mesothelioma commercial there, but
there
I just...
You go. Terrible. That's not something funny to laugh about. I'm sorry.
You're right. So then they get to the wizard, and they have to...
Did you just air quotes the wizard?
No, I did not.
It sure sounded like you did.
So after that really interminable dance number,
what?
They finally get in to see
what?
The wizard.
It's the horses of a different color.
Yes. This...
Oh, my
so
God.
If you took the music out of this movie and just made it a straight, you know, fantasy action movie, I think it would be about 30 minutes long.
I think you're right.
Chris, it's a musical. You can't take the music out. That's what a musical is.
You could with Little Shop of Horrors.
No. You guys don't understand. Like
no, we do.
No. The no, point is children get to do this musical over and over and over on stage. And
ever and ever.
I know, but it's beautiful. And
hey, I live down the road from Ozfest, okay?
Okay. I'd like to do Ozfest.
Is that where Ozzy Osbourne plays?
No, that's with two Z's. This one is only with one Z.
Gotcha.
The town of Chittenango, not far from where I live, actually has a yellow brick road because it's where L. Frank Baum grew up.
Right.
And had the family.
Oh, that's so neat.
Yeah.
I
and
love
for the longest
that.
Time, they actually had some of the surviving members of the Munchkins come for the parade, but unfortunately the last one passed away 2 years ago.
Oh.
Yeah, I know, it was very sad. She
that
was
loved. Sad.
That was the last one?
Yeah, I think so.
That's sad.
That was the last one willing to come to Ozfest, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, my gosh, it's 2016.
Well, she died in 2014, I think, so still, that was
okay.
75
yeah.
years?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
This, yeah.
Yeah.
Long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
So, Chris, you mentioned
yeah.
something interesting to me when we were watching it about a difference between, well, something that was in the musical, but it wasn't spoken aloud,
the golden cap. Yeah, the witch, yeah. When she gives that line about sending the monkeys off to do something, she's holding in her hand something that is never addressed in the dialogue and never seen again.
Okay.
What she's holding is the golden cap, which is the device, the magical item in the book that summons the monkeys.
Oh, gotcha, because they're all porters.
No, because they are cursed to obey whoever holds that hat.
But all
and
of them
I...
have little hats and vests.
I don't know why they went with the bellboy motif.
Yeah.
I think they did it because that's the way that a hurdy-gurdy monkey used to dress.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Can I also say that when I was a child, I was very confused why the flying monkeys and the servants of the Wicked Witch were following her, and then when she dies, they're all like, "Hail Dorothy, the Wicked Witch."
Those are not the monkeys.
Okay.
Those are the green-faced guys.
The green-faced guys. But
right, the green-faced guys are the people who live in that land. They are, so just like the Munchkins were enslaved by the Wicked Witch of the East, in the book they're called the Winkies. They're never called this in the movie, but they are obviously different. that's what it is. And
I know, it just sounds dirty.
It really does.
Yes.
And so in the book, they always wear... yellow, and the Munchkins always wear blue, and the people in the South, whose name I forget, they always wear red. But they didn't do that color thing in the movie.
Right.
But if you notice that the people that she has working for her, they all have green skin and hooked noses, just like
yes.
her.
Yes, yes.
So is she one of them?
One of us. Sorry.
No, I never got that idea.
I thought that maybe she might have been.
Yeah, I never did either until this time when I'm watching it for the first time in about 20 years and going, oh, I never noticed they all look like her.
But that's kind of it. I always thought that's why she was their leader, was the fact that they all looked the same.
Mm.
But then again, if the Wicked Witch of the East is overseeing the Munchkins, she's obviously not a Munchkin. So,
yeah.
You
right.
know.
I just always wondered why they were so happy that their leader was dead, but I guess they didn't like her.
Well, obviously, long hours and very short vacations.
Right.
Right. They wanted $15 an hour.
Exactly.
Maybe
which
so.
Which, as we all know, is, you know, patently ludicrous in 1939.
Can you imagine getting that kind of money in 1939?
Oh, my God. You'd be a Rockefeller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I just want to also say that the wizard in this is not a very nice person. You know, when they go to see the wizard,
yeah.
he just scares the bejeepers out of them.
I think that's what we're going for with the recurring theme, though, is that that all of the supposedly magic using critters are not nice, are inherently not nice people.
Hmm.
You know, we know that Glinda lies and infers that Dorothy is ugly. We know that the wicked witches are wicked.
Yeah.
And the powerful Oz, the
Great and Powerful?
The Great and Powerful Oz. Obviously is not a nice person because he doesn't let people in to see him.
Ever.
You know? And when he does
ever, apparently.
And when he does, it's this big pyrotechnic show that, you know, obviously he went on to work with KISS and maybe
that was actually I was thinking of like 70s concerts when I saw it.
So, you know, just ELO, you know, things like that. So it's the fact that people, I think the reason why that's a consistent theme throughout is that, you know, it's showing that people in power are inherently kind of jerks.
Power
you got to be kind of jerky and egomaniacal.
I'm not really sure they thought it through that much. I think they just thought, you know, these people are the good guys and kids are going to know that these are the good guys, so they can really do anything they want.
No, I think what I'm saying is from this point of view, I think it's more from an L. Frank Baum point of view.
I don't know.
L. Frank Baum really didn't think that stories should have a point. He just wanted them to entertain children.
You can kind of tell
with some of the later books because they just sort of wander from plot point to plot point without really connecting.
So it's Fritz Lieber's Pfeffered and the Grey Mouser series.
I would say even less directed than that.
Wow.
I mean, I've read 9 of the books, and they get pretty awful.
Wow.
The one with the pumpkin head, that one was kind of scary for me.
Yeah.
But we're probably going off on a tangent.
We're going so. It's another tangent. It's actually a directed tangent, but yeah, a tangent nonetheless. Movie description in a 1998 TV listing describes The Wizard of Oz as: transported to a surreal landscape, a young girl kills the first person she meets and then teams up with 3 strangers to kill again.
Fantastic.
What?
That's wonderful. Oh my God, that's such a great description.
A writer named Rick Polito submitted that for the one-line movie blurb.
Fantastic.
That's really wicked.
Well, what more is there to say, really?
I actually got a couple things to say. If you want, was the wizard trying to get Dorothy killed?
I don't think he thought of that. I've thought about this for about 40 years, since I was about 7. So now people know how old I am. But I don't think he was. I think that he wanted them to leave. And, you know, I don't think he really thought of it. I think he was like,
so he was just trying to get rid of them and thought that would keep them busy so that they would never come back.
I don't think it would keep them busy. I think it was such a difficult task that they would give up and leave them alone.
Yes, I agree with Pete. I think they were going to give up and leave them alone, and he never, ever thought for 1 second that they were going to do it.
What a world.
And Dorothy, this girl from Kansas, like, he just thought that they wouldn't do it, and they would stay in Oz so that they would never come back and bother him again.
Yeah.
Because his ruling was they had to bring the broomstick of the Wicked Witch of the West.
Yes.
And they do it, and he is utterly surprised. And he's like, come back and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's when, Dorothy...
That's when Toto pulls the curtain.
When Toto finds him. Pay no attention to
the man behind the curtain.
You know,
right.
It's a fake.
What are you doing here, Toto? Go bless the rains down in Africa.
Oh, my God. I don't know. I never thought Toto was all that cute.
Go find Rosanna. Why are you here with Dorothy?
Did you guys like Toto? Because when I was little, I didn't really like Toto that much. And
my favorite part about Toto was something that my son pointed out as we're watching. He goes, does Toto get trapped in that basket? And I said, no. And he goes, because I don't remember him walking. I said, Toto walks everywhere. Okay, Toto needs some serious props for the amount of work that dog puts in, including climbing and descending castle stairs that are easily as big as he is.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Wow. And the dog really did it.
He's a trooper.
Yeah.
But I just didn't think he was that cute of a dog.
I don't think Toto's intended to be cute. I think he's just intended to be loyal and lovable.
Loyal and lovable. Okay.
Yeah. You know, he doesn't have to be pretty. He just has to be loyal
and
lovable.
He's Dorothy's familiar.
He's Dorothy's bestest friend ever.
Right?
Yeah.
So then they go and he gives them exactly what they wanted, which they always had.
Which they always had, yeah.
They showed how smart the Scarecrow is by saying this.
Sum of the square roots of any two sides of an isosceles triangle is equal to the square root of the remaining side.
Only that's not right.
Right. No, that's incorrect.
He says a wrong thing.
I think originally it was supposed to be the Pythagorean theorem, as a matter of fact.
Yes, it sounds like he's trying to say the Pythagorean theorem, but he's wrong.
Yes, he is dead wrong, in fact.
Well, it would sound smart to kids, guys.
Plus, in
sure.
1939, how many people were doing higher maths, really?
Yeah, you guys, I mean, I'm sure.
I don't know what the school system standards were in 1939.
See? It sounds smart anyway, so, you know.
Yes.
It does sound smart, but until you actually listen to what he's
saying.
Which
is how I've gotten through most of life, quite frankly.
Well, yeah, Pete, you always sound smart.
I sound smart, but I don't have to be right.
And you guys said the costumes in this were beautiful, and the makeup job was excellent.
Oh, my God. It's such a feast for the eyes.
Yeah.
Everything is
I wish
so...
I wasn't blind to see this movie, but, I, you know, when
oh,
I was
here.
When I was a little girl, I could see it. So it's all
yeah,
in my
no,
memory.
Gorgeous.
So,
it's gorgeous, and it's very well acted. And while it's not super well written, and there are certain cuts and plot holes...
And it's a landmark, you know, moment in fantasy movies.
Oh,
if this movie is making the fantasy movies that we're enjoying later on possible.
I think
true.
So, yeah.
True, by showing them that they're economically viable.
And that you can do wonderful things on screen with a little bit of, you know, wizardry
sure.
and
yeah.
Finagling.
Creativity and imagination. The only line I didn't like was the, oh, come on. Or, well,
yeah.
Come on. I mean, that's the only line that I...
That's, you know, and I can kind of see the director going, I don't really like that. We'll change that later. And then just forgetting about it.
Yeah, they
or
just forgot.
Or letting that director go, and then a new director comes in and goes, all right, let's keep rolling.
Right.
Yeah. It sounds really like bad music theater.
bad you could
even, it's bad scripting.
Yeah. You could even hear a breathing after that, and then the lion starts singing. Because Dorothy, I believe, sits down at that point. Yeah. Stop it.
Well, plus she had a corset on, so I'm sure the core woman
right, she probably
gasping
yeah.
for air.
So,
oh, my God, I can't breathe.
So Chris pointed out to me that when Dorothy goes back home and she says, you know, they're very happy to see her, and she says, and you were there, and you were there, and you were there. But Chris pointed out to me that really nothing changed. Like, the woman that's the mean
Miss
woman,
Gulch.
Miss Gulch, is still going to take Toto to the sheriff
but
to be destroyed.
But do we know that for sure? Did she may have gotten swept up in the tornado, for all we know?
She may have, and if you want the movie to have a happy ending, you have to assume that she died.
Which I'm
wow.
willing
wow,
to suspend my disbelief for.
Sure, I'm willing to, you know, she was on her bike. We know that she was on her bike because
right.
she was floating past the window.
Yep.
Well, she was biking home, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When she had miles to go.
Toto in her basket.
Maybe she thought, oh, Toto died in the tornado.
Maybe.
So I don't know. Maybe she wasn't going to come back to the farm. Who knows? But
ultimately, nothing changes. She doesn't really learn anything, and everything is basically the same as when she left.
I think that the plot is kind of the same. But I think Dorothy, like I was saying earlier, so I guess I beg to disagree with you, because I think that Dorothy realizes how much she loves her aunt and uncle. And,
right, her
and
wanderlust
the farmhand,
is cured because
you know.
She knows what's important.
She knows
I don't
important.
Think her wanderlust is cured. I just think it's waylaid for a little while. Because we all know that once she turns, like, 20, she's like, I'm out of here.
Right.
Wow, you're...
She never does because
you're
she's
harsh,
not forever.
You're just harsh. Or I'd like to believe that, like, in the book, she takes her Aunt Em and Uncle Henry to the Land of Oz. And
that does happen.
And then they live in a magical land, and they're happy, and they have money forever, and each other. I don't know why I said the money part, but and they have each other.
Because money's
know.
Nice, it's like money.
Yeah, money, right. Money's cool.
We're
but,
capitalists.
Yeah.
We dig the whole
is it thing. Is it time to rate this movie?
We can. I mean,
I
as a final note, I mean, there's a lot of trivia and goofs and quotes that are on the IMDb page and in Wikipedia. I really strongly encourage people to go because this movie has one of the most interesting, you know, production stories and backstories and all these little tidbits about it that we can't even list them all or read them all because
the
well,
post
you know,
would be too long.
They're out there and we're already up to an hour.
Yeah.
Yes.
So now I'm ready.
Very good.
Okay, so Chris, How would you rate The Wizard of Oz?
On a scale from 1 to 5 gold pieces, how would you rate The Wizard of Oz?
1 to 5 gold pieces. You know, for movie quality, I have to, you know, kind of downgrade it because it's just not up to the standards of today as far as scripting and musical themes. But in terms of historical significance and technical significance, I have to bump it up. So I'm going to give it 4 gold pieces.
Oh.
How could you do that?
In other words,
I think he's
twice as good as Excalibur.
in your book.
Okay, Sharon, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate The Wizard of Oz?
I mean, 5. Absolutely, 5. I'm not even gonna qualify it because it's a classic. I just love every song from it. I think this movie has heart and soul, and I can't believe you gave it a 4. I want to cry. I don't know what to say.
All right, wow. Pete, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate The Wizard of Oz?
I'm not sure I want to answer because I don't want to break Sharon's heart.
it's like kicking a puppy.
Just go ahead. I'm already tearing
It's like
up.
Kicking Toto after he's already been stamped on by one of the witch's guards.
It's like euthanizing a 9-year-old's dog.
Oh, my God.
Stop. Stop.
I'm going to give it 4 gold and 3 silver.
You just had to outdo me, didn't you?
No, I was actually thinking of giving it 4 gold and 2 silver, and then I realized that I found a lot of the things still very amusing. I honestly, like, either giggled, chuckled, or laughed out loud at some of the stuff, and I realized there's a timeless quality.
There is a timeless quality.
There absolutely
some of the
is
stuff,
a timeless
and I think
quality.
That deserves at least a few silver pieces.
I think they called her a whippersnapper.
You know what, Pete? I'm going to match your 3, so I'm going to bump it up.
Okay.
Did they call her a whippersnapper?
Yeah.
Whippersnapper?
Oh,
I
yeah.
love that part. I wish my grandfather was still alive so I could watch this movie with him, and I wish he could yell at you guys for giving it
for
four.
It.
And my grandfather would,
but if he calls me a whippersnapper, I'll say, how dare you bring up child abuse in my presence, sir?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about our next movie.
What is our next movie going to be, Christopher Douglas?
My pick.
Okay, what is it going to be?
It is going to be the James Franco joint.
Yay!
Oz the Great and Powerful.
Woo!
I haven't seen it yet.
We are going from the classic Wizard of Oz to the sequel or the prequel that Disney made to a movie they didn't make in the first place.
I am so excited about this. I can't tell you.
I'm going to purposely give it less gold pieces because
so fair. So fair.
So it's
that'll be my revenge upon you.
As Glinda would say, you know, like, be gone before someone drops the house on you.
I can guarantee you that this is not a 5 gold piece movie. I've seen it.
Oh, okay. I have not
seen it. We have not seen it yet. We have the Blu-ray downstairs. We haven't gotten to watch it yet.
No, I saw it twice. I saw it once in the theaters, and then I saw it again, I think, on Amazon.
Oh, cool.
So,
Chris, how can people get in touch with us if they want to leave? Hey,
we really want to have anybody who listens to the show and likes it, I really want you to go to iTunes and give us a great rating and a review so that other people who might like the show will be able to find us because more reviews bumps us up in the search queue.
Please.
And you know what? If you give us a good review, we will read it out loud on the show because we love to hear from our listeners.
We are happy to give shout-outs.
And if there's something that we could do better, please tell us because we want to be the best podcasters ever.
And if you want to talk to us without actually showing everything you say on the iTunes webpage or iTunes podcast page, you can email us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com.
You can also find us on Twitter at dragonreelpodcast. Right?
No.
Dragonreel.
Yes.
Sorry, at dragonreel. On Twitter.
And also on Facebook at facebook.com/dragonreel.
Right. I should know that because I'm tweeting all the time now. So.
Yeah. So I believe that's all we had to say about The Wizard of Oz. So join us next time for episode 17 where we talk about Oz the Great and Powerful.
Yay.
And until then.
There's no place like home.